Hey guys, welcome to Bowler's Grind. I'm your host, Marshall Kennebrew, and today, co-host Kyle Michalowski and myself are discussing the two national tournaments that were here in Las Vegas this past weekend. That is the True Amateur Tournament that took place at the South Point, and the Amateur Bowling Tournament that took place here at the Gold Coast. So we're going to be discussing us making the finals in each tournament, discussing where we finished, and talking about the ultimate winners and just our thoughts along the way. So we hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. It'll be out tomorrow morning. That is Wednesday morning, 8 a.m. Check it out on Spotify and Facebook.
So basically this week I started, we were planning on bowling both the tournaments, or at least I was planning on bowling TAT and ABT. I wanted to go two times each. I ended up doing three times, but so on Wednesday I bowled my first two squads of TAT. My look was really over under. I was trying to use urethane the whole time because I saw such high scores with urethane. And I was like, I don't understand because my ball reaction is not good. And then I thought maybe it was not enough surface on the first squad. So I went downstairs, went to the pro shop, grabbed a 500 pad, put 500 on my urethane ball. Next squad, I have the same issue. And I have one ball that looked pretty good, which was my Axiom from the same squad. I was trying to use urethane, but it wasn't good on the other lane. So I was like, crap. So I was still trying to use urethane on one lane and Axiom on the other. And it still just wasn't enough to qualify. So later that day, I went down to ABT at Gold Coast, and it was Wednesday and it just rained that day. So the approaches were so sticky. Like I could not slide, couldn't do anything. So I basically was just throwing it with my upper body, and luckily that, even though it's a bad habit of mine, it worked out in my favor for this one. But the first two sets I was close, but I was not enough because some of the other guys in my squad were bowling that qualified a little bit higher than me were bowling in that squad. But I managed to put a set together, and four guys that we know all made the cut for that one, which was me, Jason Anderson, Jesse Williams, and JoJo Barcelona. All four of us made that cut that day in the master division at ABT. It took me my third try just trying to, because it was still a little wishy-washy look-wise. And the first set I tried to use urethane again because it was hooking so much. But for some reason, urethane was over under, and it went from there. So how did your first entry into TAT go?
Okay, so for me, I waited until the last entry that was 5:30 on Saturday. I was going to go at like 9:30, but then I learned that like they condensed a lot of the schedules throughout the week just to make the brackets a little bit better. So I went 5:30, and I really all week, I wanted to rest my legs. I wanted to make sure that like, if I was going to go far on the weekend, I was ready to go. I was conditioned. So I really didn't even bowl a lot the whole week. And like I said, all week, my mindset was just to prepare my body, not to over practice. Sometimes I've been known to do that, just to practice too much, and then come competition, I'm already depleted, a little bit lower on the weight scale. So I wanted to put on a little weight, like be ready just to bowl this whole weekend and feel good, not feel tired from the get-go. So Monday, Tuesday, just cardioed a little bit. I did a little live stream at GameWorks, got some sport pattern practice in. So earlier in the week, just spares. Then later in the week, I wanted to see a flat pattern, something that just would make me have that reminder of this is not league. There is no free hook. You know, you have to be a little bit more technically sound, play a little bit more straight up, just see the pins go through on more of a pattern. So I felt good about doing that at GameWorks. The ball that I liked the most at GameWorks was the Pitch Black. The only pitch black that I have is a pinned down pitch black. So it just, for whatever reason, it allowed me to play straight up. It allowed me to keep my feet inside 20 and just to play inside the second arrow. And so I went in with that confidence. So I didn't see the particular tat pattern all week, but going into this, my mindset was I'm just going to work on my body and see what the other bowlers are talking about. And it kind of worked to my favor because I saw a lot of bowlers were using urethane. I know Chad was using urethane. Ramsey, I know a lot of different bowlers were just throwing urethane that typically don't use that, which told me like, all right, someone that I kind of do enjoy using it. Let's here we go. This is what we're gonna do. So that was my mindset. I showed up 5:30. The other thing I wanted to really kind of, again, this doesn't mean that it works sometimes, but sometimes I hope that this is the strategy is that, you know, that last squad, you got a lot of bowlers that have, they're tired. They've been bowling all week. Maybe they haven't made it. Maybe they're pressing a little bit. And for me just to kind of cruise in, feeling refreshed, and just to know that I got to bowl my best, just bowl three games and I'm good to go. It just reminds me that, like, if I'm going to only commit 150 and I'm not planning on buying in two or three times, well, that's my time to go. So I showed up, got on the lanes. First game was pretty good. But I screwed up the 10th. I had a split in the 10th and it really messed up my score. I only had about two, like one open to that point. I think it was like a 155. So not confident, not feeling great. But at the same time, I wasn't going to change my plan. So I stuck with the pitch black, had a big jump up game two, messed up the 10th again, shot 186 game two. But I knew there was more on the table. So I still stay with the right same ball. I have all these other balls here to use, but there was no point in fixing something that wasn't really broken. I just had to fix myself per se and get myself in order and make the best quality shots. Heading into game three, I was striking more than usual. I did not know this, but heading into the 10th frame, I don't know exactly what my score was at. I think it was at a 160, but I wasn't working off anything. I had an open in the ninth, and I told myself, "Well, let's just finish strong. You know, let's just make sure every shot you do here, take your time and just, you know, make it your best." And I struck three times in a row. Come to find out, that's exactly what I needed to qualify. And one saving grace along that story is, in the second game, I walked over to Kyle, my ball rep, and I asked him, "I go, you know, do you know what the cut is?" And I believe you said the cut was 50 or 51 or something like that. And that really just told me, all right, like 200 or bust. So you came here, you worked all week. Do you believe you can throw a 200? And on every shot, I told myself, yes, I do believe. Now I shot a 190. I fell a little bit short, but I really felt like that mindset game three helped me have a solid, you know, game three, which led me into the finals the next day. So that was my first qualifying session.
Go. So you made it first try. I had to go that same day in the morning to give tap one more try. And next time I went in, I came in with the mindset, let's play a little straighter, still use urethane because it worked for so many people. So it has to be in play for me. I just got to figure out why it's not working for me. So I closed in my angles. I got it going in front of me and it looked way better. I shot plus 50 or 63, and my only problem with my set, that set in particular, was I guttered the very last shot of my set to have pushed me over to 73, which would have been 100% safe, but it ended up being safe anyway. But I was really sweating bullets when I thought that like it might be close for the whole other squad while I was waiting for the cut line to be posted. That's the thing that sucks about bowling the earlier squad, that you got to wait out the whole other squad if you're gonna know if you make it or not. Unless you're plus like 100 or something, it's not 100% guaranteed, even though you can kind of go off the cut lines from previous and just say that's good, but you don't ever know what's true or not. And
So,
so
I mean, just real quick, I wanted to ask you something about that. I've seen some people bowl multiple times within the same cut. Now, strategy wise, is that the best strategy, or would they be better off served waiting until the next block and letting their score stand if they're close, and then just if they don't make it, saving that double payment and applying that to brackets or something?
It depends. So, you basically only want to do that if you're so close that and you think you can beat your score. If you lucked out and your score was as high as it was and you had no luck whatsoever, then I would wait and bowl separate set to try to hope that scores drop or something. But if you're close, you always want to try to bump up that score because then you can lock it in. But depending on like if it's above where the cut line has been, then you probably shouldn't bowl again. But if it's below where the cut line has been, but it is close, like let's say for example a tat, it was you're at 40, you may want to bowl again just to try to top it off so you can make sure you make it through.
But here's my pushback to that. Wouldn't you rather top it off in the next cut block? That way, if you do make it, you save yourself an extra 150. If you don't make it, you're still going to try again, just not in that one where you've already invested money to which you already could move on. That's how I've always thought of it.
Yes and no, but like you gotta think of it like this. Your score is already set, so you're just pushing the ceiling up, hopefully. Obviously it's always a gamble no matter which way you do, because the next set could always be lower. I'm not
But
giving one
do
hundred.
you see what I'm saying? If you just wait, like let's say the end of Tuesday, starting Wednesday, it's a new cut block. And then you wait Tuesday night, they put the scores up, it's 40, and you had 39. Okay, cool. You didn't make it. But now it's Wednesday. You just go Wednesday. Now, and that gives you the knowledge to know that you don't have to pay twice as much. Now, if you don't mind paying twice as much, then yes, I would say bowl three in a row. But I'm just saying, like from a pure percentage profitability perspective, would you agree with me?
Well, it's not really a percentage profitability. It's more like a more like a risk factor weigh your odds, because if you wait till the next day, scores could go up or they could go down. And it all depends on how you're feeling that day. Like if you felt like you bowled good and just made some stupid errors, then bowling again makes sense. If you bowled bad, maybe reset for the night and come back the next day, then it makes more sense to do that. But it all depends on the situation. It's not always cut and dry, like you should bowl individually separate squads. And also you gotta look at it like if you're doing that, you can do side pots on every one and you're not affecting your last score too. So you can always do that if you're
Okay,
in that range.
see now let me understand that real quick. So let's say you qualify, you try qualifying Monday night, and the block you're on is a Monday Tuesday block, okay? And Monday you're at 40, you don't know what it's at, but Tuesday you want to show up and just bowl brackets and side pots. Can you do that? Okay. So then you can do that, and if you bowl well, you're not going to up your qualifying score, but you can essentially raise the bar of the qualifying score, which then helps out your initial, right? Okay, so that's a strategy. So I'm looking at different ways of going about this. If you're going to, again, protect your investment with a 150 by playing the brackets and the side pots throughout the week, like I in my mind, if I were to try qualifying Monday night and I had a decent score and I didn't know if it was going to go or not, I would probably try to then make my money back bowling well on side pots and brackets the next day,
So,
which also then raises the bar of that score.
the caveat though is that if you are close enough that you can sit out and wait, just sit out and wait if you're going about it that way, because you get a discount after you qualify. Because I think they only charge you lineage or something. I'm not sure for TAT. I know for ABT. They only charge you like lineage and a little bit more to bowl bowl after you qualify. So you can bowl just for side pots for the rest of the week after you qualify. But if you haven't made it yet and you're like close and you think the score is going to be good enough, then just wait it out and bowl again tomorrow if you didn't make it, because then you are wasting money in terms of how you're thinking about it, because they don't give you the discount until you qualify.
Right. This is my third tat. I've made the finals two times. I feel like I was most prepared for this one, but I also feel like I left a lot on the table. So back to your story, Kyle. How did the next round go for you?
So I put it together, and basically I shot plus 50 or 63, and I set it out and just waited because I felt like it would be enough, and it ended up being enough. So I just hung out the rest of the day. I got to watch a little bit of you later in the day. I got to watch some of my other friends bowl, and the end of basically got to wrap up that day knowing that I was bowling in the finals for both tournaments the next 2 days and just had to be ready. I already had a game plan for both tournaments and I just had to execute it. And I learned a few different things and just needed to do all the things that I did earlier in the week going from there. So what were you doing to prepare for the finals this week?
So I didn't have a whole lot of time after I knew that I was going to, or, you know, once I qualified, but I went into the week on Monday having the mindset that I was going to qualify. So after I did on Saturday, if I wouldn't have, I was going to go bowl another tournament at the Santa Fe. I know they had a no tap going, and then maybe try to go do the ABT world. But in my mind, I wanted to focus on tat. And once I knew that my score was good, I went home, got a nice rest, woke up early, and I went into round one feeling way more confident than I did in the qualifying round. I don't know about you, but I went into that round of, I think it was 112 bowlers. They whittled it down from roughly 1,100 to 112. And in that 112, I walked in feeling great. I had a great night's sleep. I felt refreshed. Walked in using the pitch black. Was debating how much surface I should put on it, because I knew that it was going to be fresh versus the qualifying squad, which was like on a quadruple burn. So I wanted to kind of see, because the ball was working great the night before, let's just see it in warmups before we mess with it mess with it at all. And in warmups, it was going a little long. So I just, you know, I put a little bit of about 500 on it. And I noticed that helped it kind of break back to the pocket. And that first game, I literally had no opens. I think I started off with three straight strikes. I had two splits in the ninth and 10th, but prior to the ninth and 10th, it was literally all nines and all strikes. So felt good. The results were good, which had me feeling great going into the next round. How did your round of 112 go?
So I started off, I was doing the same game plan, your thing from Strader. It looked good. Was just grinding away. And then I had a few errors that put me in a difficult position, and then I tried to hang in there. I put up as much score as I could, and then I think it came down to the 10th, and I missed the spare in the 10th to lock it out, and I was sweating because this other guy, another two-handed kid, was super close to me in score, and all he needed to strike out, or he needed two strikes and seven count to win or to beat me. He struck, and then I'm like, oh, it's over. I should have made that spare. And then he goes four through the middle.
Wow.
And I'm just walking around trying to calm down from that round. Like, crap, I have to bowl again. Now I gotta get focused again. How did I get through? And then, so we move on to the next round. I felt pretty good. Now that, like, I felt like I made it through that, there's nothing that's gonna stop me now. So I go into the next round. In practice, my ball reaction's a little hooking, or starts hooking a little more. So I'm like, okay, I'll just move in a little bit. It looked good moving in. Then I shot 222 to be the second highest on the pair. There was one guy who was just unstoppable, shot 260. And I was like, okay, so we're through this round. How'd this round go for you?
Okay, so this is where my story took a turn for the worse. I was feeling good. I was they set up the lanes. They call the handicap division. So they gave us the papers. We go down the lanes. I'm like 31. And then 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, they make an announcement that they need all the handicap bowlers to go back because someone who had qualified shouldn't have. Because someone had wrote down the score plus the handicap instead of the scratch score. So not a problem. Everyone had to go wait back in line. I was the last one to walk in line because I didn't hear it. I had my headphones in. And I'm right behind Rome. And they give us our lane assignments. And now I'm on 32B, which is the same pair, which is the very last pair. And I'm walking down. And they're like, hey, we're starting warm-ups. And I'm literally walking up as they're starting warm-ups. And I see two bowlers on the lane. And my thoughts, I let what was in front of me versus being the best competitor that I am take over the moment. So I looked at and I go, man, only one of us is going to move on. That was my instant observation because I know how the rules are. One and three per pair, one bowler moves on. If there's two bowlers on, two out of four. We'll move on. So if there's four bowlers on a pair, two will move on. If there's five, two will move on. And if there's six, three will move on. So essentially 50%, 40%, 33%, correct? Okay. So from my initial glance, my thoughts are like, holy shit, I'm at a 33% chance. This sucks. But that thought should have never crept in my mind. That's the truth. It shouldn't have mattered if it was Belmo and Buttruff on the lane. I should have just smiled and grabbed my ball and started striking. So as we're bowling, I noticed a couple people were walking up to our lane, looking at our lane, pointing, and they were looking at the sheets. And then I started looking to the right. I noticed that every other lane had five bowlers. Five, 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 or four. 40%, 50%. And then my mind went even further. I was like, well, that's kind of sucks. Like we're all not only for me, but every other bowler on this pair is at a disadvantage in this round of the round of 50. And I didn't necessarily understand how the pairs were put together or how it was randomized. Before I walked up to that lane, there was only two bowlers on that lane. So that lane wasn't even a properly sized lane. Like if I was the last bowler to walk over, it baffled me that that lane only had two bowlers on it in the first place versus all the other handicaps having five. So again, all these things were computing in my brain as I'm trying to warm up. So I figured I would just ask about it. And someone gave me an answer. They said, that's just the random draw. That's just the way that it's drawn sometimes. That's why there's a threshold of one and three, da 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 da. So I walked back to my lane and at that point I'm like, huh. I couldn't shake it out of my head, to be 1,000% honest with you. I couldn't shake it. And my first throw, whether it's mental mindset, not being in the moment, not focused, because again, this was not the same mindset that I was in an hour earlier. I'm focusing on way too much. That isn't the game of bowling. And I throw the first ball. I'm the first one up there to throw it. As soon as the lights go on, I'm already ready to go. I overhook it. It hits the seven pin, one count. So I instantly knew. I was like, okay, that was weird. That wasn't normal. I threw the shot again. I hit eight open. All right. So I left an open first game. Not terribly upset. So I go to the next lane. Perfect shot. Flush. 10 pin. Ah. All right. And I walk up, hook it. Now, at this point, knowing that there's one in three, I've gone open, open. Two people on my lane, sweet people. They've gone spare, spare. I'm starting to say, I'm a little upset, but I'm trying not to show it. And this is where it goes. I don't know how it can go any more south than this. So I get up there to the line, and I didn't feel any closer than I usually am. I throw a shot, nine count, but I guess my foot hits the line. Foul.
Jeez.
So nine count. So that, in case anyone doesn't know, that means it's a zero, right? That's like throwing it in the gutter. And I go, well, at least you don't have to shoot a 10 pin. Let's try to throw a strike. Nine count. So my first three frames, open, open, open. I knew I was in deep trouble. I didn't know if I should switch to reactive and just try striking a lot and moving like a little left and just hooking it. I really didn't know what to do. I stuck with the pitch black. I proceed to go seven straight spares. Didn't strike once. So I go all nines and eights spare. And I miss the cut on that lane by 15 pins. So again, was I upset about the situation? Absolutely. Was I new? Was that something that I learned as far as like bowling a tat tournament, how they're structured, how the breakdown works, never making it to the second round of the finals? Absolutely. That was complete new knowledge to me that you could be on a lane that you're at a 33% chance to move on, where the lane next to you, they could be at a 50% chance of moving on before you guys even throw a ball. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of that. I don't know if ABT does that or if other tournaments do that. But outside of that one thing, love the tat experience. But in that particular situation, I'm going to tell you right now, I wasn't the happiest camper. And it affected my play. You know, I think I finished with like a 150 that game, 140. And the guy that moved on, he just didn't have any opens. He was just sparing it up. He struck like once or twice. The lane wasn't even that terrible. You know, and that's the unfortunate side of it. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but that's definitely something that I learned.
Yeah, that's one thing you gotta like take what's dealt to you, because unfortunately, no matter what happens, they're not gonna change it because you don't like it. So you just have to do your best to win the situation. And unfortunately, the situation got you just taking hold of it and running away with it. Obviously, there was not just the situation that was getting you down, though, because like obviously you didn't have a we were struggling to put all 10 down, so you got to figure out what to do in that situation. But unfortunately, we can't recreate it and see what would happen. But I would say your reactive probably would look good to try to knock them all down, but obviously you have the slower ball speed, so it's kind of hard to gauge how much you need to move and stuff like that off of that. But yeah.
Yeah, that was the challenge. I was even thinking like in the fourth frame, hey, let's just go six frames of two-handed and see if I can just string some Brooklyns or strikes. Like I was searching for a game plan, knowing that I was running out of time. But again, I dug myself a hole. And I guess the question to you as someone who's more of an experienced bowler, like what would have been the detriment of moving over like the lane next to me or the lane next to me or any of the lanes that had five? Just moving over a bowler into our lane. What would that have caused?
I don't know. That like it's just it doesn't really make sense to me, but also the whole thing didn't make sense to me too, because like I got moved off the pair I was on, and then they started practice while we were moving, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, no, that was my issue too. I was the last person in line. They're starting practice. I'm walking over to a lane of only two bowlers. And I'm thinking they can't even qualify on this lane if I what if I didn't show up? They're on a lane of two. Then what would have been the solution?
It would have been the high of the two.
Ah, I didn't even know you could do one of two. So, but still, one of two is 50%. Better than 33, isn't it? So, to be the only lane there in the round of 50 that was at a 33% disadvantage, again, that's not me making that up. That's me pointing out a fact. And that's for the other two people too. I don't even remember their names, but they were pointing it out too. They go, "This sucks." And I go, "Yeah, it does suck." And I again, that's why I took it upon myself to ask, like, can we shift someone over? And I think their response, again, I'm still trying to understand the math. They said that they would cause an extra bowler to have to move on in the next round. To which point my mind thought, so? Like, we all paid the same amount. We all have bowled well. I mean, I could have been here from Alabama, for Christ's sakes. And if you would have told me, well, we don't want to send another bowler to the next round just because. That's that to me, that really wasn't the best answer to give to me. And again, maybe I'm missing something, but that was the one problem that I had that essentially affected my play. And going forward, I have to, like, again, if I get dealt a 20% chance of moving on, so what? Now, if it's unfair, I'll look into that. But if that's if that is the deal that is dealt from the get-go, you might have a 1 in 3 chance, and that's just something that you're going to have to sign up for. Well, again, lesson learned, you know.
Yeah, I would just take it as you got dealt a bad hand. It's like getting a bad pair. It's just something that happens. Their format basically requires that because they do have to have a specific amount of people move on because it makes it. If they had one more bowler, that would mean one more extra round for them to cut people, and that would also require more payouts. Because they did 100 per round, so if one more person made an extra round, that would kind of offset all the balances and stuff like that.
Again, man, I totally get the response now looking back, but going forward, it's almost like if you're dealt a 1 in 3 chance, just deal with it. Don't look for a better explanation other than this is how it is. And you could be right next to a lane that has a 50% chance, which in terms of math is a gigantic, in my opinion, gigantic odds upswing. You know, 17%.
Now, question though, because I don't think there was a pair with six in that round, was there?
No, but there were some with four, I believe.
Okay, so that is
Now,
50%. I didn't see any four on my set. That's what I was wondering.
again, willing to take that back if I'm wrong. There might have all been fives and 1 3. Still, that stands out like a sore thumb, in my opinion. Like, so
No, I
you're
agree.
telling me three people had the short end of the stick for 15,000? That's, again, it's a percentage thing, but looking forward, can you combat that? No, you can combat that by bowling better and not letting it mentally affect you and being the best bowler out of the 1 in 3. That's the answer, or don't bowl. But the reality is, that was the frustration that caused me to be a little not focused. I didn't strike once for the first time in I don't know how long. And that was something, like I said, that was my biggest takeaway. I'm going to have to learn more about these structures and how they play. And honestly, anything can happen. So, right. So then from that round, now that I'm done sulking, what happened from you? Because you moved on to the next round. Now you're in I think it's the round of like 25-ish or so. What happened there?
So I move on. Next pair, I have our friend Jojo bowling with me and another guy. I think he's from Mexico. And so it's me, Jojo are basically the same pin count. So within 2 pins, I think I had the advantage on him by 2 pins. And then the guy from Mexico had 32 pins. So he had double our pins, basically. And so it was just the three of us where they were only taking one. So I'm like, okay, well, I just gotta bowl like I did the last 2 rounds and I'll be fine. In practice, my ball is overhooking. And I thought it was just because I put surface on my urethane before I started. So I'm like, okay, it'll just wear off. at the end of practice, it's still overhooking. I even threw a reactive and it overhooked. I'm like, okay, so I guess I'll move left like I did in the last round. I moved left and it's still overhooked. And I'm like, okay. And I kept trying to find stuff. I tried to throw it faster and nothing worked. And then I was just completely out of it. I tried to help our friend JoJo move on to the next round by throwing it back up to mess up the lefty for Mexico's line because JoJo was within a couple pins of him at the time. And it almost worked, but JoJo couldn't finish out the 10th frame to seal the deal. And he ended up being 3 pins short of moving on.
Damn. Good effort.
Yeah, so that was my experience of the tat. I felt like there were some ups and downs, but I definitely need to n know the move off of your urethane when they start hooking. And I can't throw it faster to just compensate. I need to just, I think I need to move left with a bigger reactive, probably like a salt, a symmetrical solid, like an axiom or something. Move a little left and just throw it to where I was throwing it with the urethane. But I won't know till that situation arises again if that's the move or not. But at least I know not to try to struggle through it and try to make it work because it just definitely didn't happen.
I mean, I would say if we can try to simulate that type of scenario where we create a hold spot and then just use that ball and do what you said, if we can.
I mean, we can try and practice. Obviously, it'd have to be on a pattern, so try to do it at game works. Just use a whole bunch of surface on the gutter and try to blow up a spot and see what the answer is.
I know that they changed the pattern availability times like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. So if you want to either go
Or
today or
no, this is
tomorrow,
the last week.
this is the
Oh,
last week of regular time.
yes. I just
Oh,
saw
okay.
Dawn post.
Got
Like an
it.
hour ago.
So
But yeah.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Oh, yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week.
Okay. Well, I'm down to go if you want to do that.
All
And
right, I'll
then,
see if I can with work.
As far as ABT recap goes, I took it easy. I went driving the rest of Sunday. I went working. And then Monday, I worked as well. So I wanted to just kind of give my legs a couple days off to rest, recuperate. That way I can go into the week strong with drill work and such with two-handed work. So I did not bowl ABT. Thought about it a couple times, but I again, that was the first place where I. At the Gold Coast, not the ABT, I love ABT, but the Gold Coast is where I had issues with sticking at Team USA. And that's where I first started having a couple of bit quad and knee issues. So now that my like leg has gotten stronger and better, I didn't want to push it. But I know that you had made the finals. And so how was your experience at ABT, Kyle?
So for the finals at ABT, I came a little early, watched the earlier squad. I saw Ari bowling really well, and I saw that a few high scores were going on. And then we get to start the squad. I have a decent look. It's not amazing. And I completely ruined my first game with two misses, one in the middle of the game and one at the end of the game to shoot 180. If I had made, I needed to spare in the 10th, and it was the first shot of the 10th, so I needed that spare, and I could have got a couple extra pins, and I'll relate to later. Then I go into the next game, I shoot 213. I had a really good look. I should have shot even higher, but I tugged it like in the middle of a string. I had like five in a row, and then I tugged it to leave a baby split. And unfortunately, I couldn't convert it. I got it to there, and my spare air ball hooked to prevent that. And then I also had another bad shot of the 10th to prevent me from shooting at least like 230 or something. And then I go in the last game. My look from the last pair was pretty much there. I had to do a little bit of adjustment, and then I shot like, which is nonstop striking on that pair. Shot 222 with one errant shot that went through the middle, left a split. I was able to move off that and continue striking to shoot 222. And then I was like, okay, I'm plus 59 with my pins now. So hopefully that'll be enough. And they call the cut score, and it was plus 69. And I'm looking back at all the spares that I missed, and I'm like, man. So basically, my takeaway from this whole weekend is that I need to practice spares even more than I have been. I felt like they've been pretty good, but just like in those moments that I need them, when I want them too bad, I tug it or something, and I just need to have absolute trust that it's going to happen, so I don't tug it or anything like that. So I need to just grind on spares for a little bit. Make sure that I'm not missing them in those moments and not putting unneeded stress on myself, because at TAT, I was stressing a lot because of spares. And at ABT, I completely missed the cut just from one of three spares. Any one of them would have put me through.
There you go. And that's the same deal with me. You know, leaving three opens to start out my round of 50, that definitely cost me a lot. I didn't even have to strike, and I still could have made it through if I just would have been locked in with my plastic. And I think something too that you're speaking on that is like an undertone of what a lot of people struggle with is not just shooting spares, but shooting high pressure spares, spares that are worth more than other spares, like towards the end of a block or towards the end of a set. You know what I mean? Like, let's say you did well game one and two. You still got to shoot five, six spares game three to get you through. So every spare you're going to shoot is going to have a little bit more mentally on it. So I think that goes back to the mental game too, of just knowing that, like, whatever your routine is, you know, and I'm still trying to define what my spare routine will be mentally, because I've heard some people like to sing songs. I know some people like to just count one, two, three, four, five. But whatever it is, that's where I think you'll shine through. If you know, you shoot 100 spares this week. Okay, cool. What's your percentage? That's important. But what was your routine of like, you know, for here's a joke that just came in my head, singing like A, B, C, easy as one, two, three. If you had a phrase like that as you're walking up and shooting your spares, you'll forget about a lot of the extra worry that comes along with bowling. And I think that's where I want to focus on. Like, yeah, I want to shoot spares better, but I also want to have a almost a mantra that allows me to just, when things feel a little heavy, just go back to that mantra. And that essentially is what will hold me through. So that's what I heard from you, but that's also something that I'm working on with myself.
All right. Yeah, I'll give it a try. We'll see. Practice. I'll try to start doing something like that. Most of the time, I just try to clear my mind, but like, I think I just didn't trust my spares enough this week. And I feel like just putting the reps in so that like I feel 100% confident that I'm going to make it every time.
You
And
know, the
I'm
thing
good
for
to
me
go.
too is, sorry, go ahead. Would you have more?
Oh, I said, as long as I just feel 100% confident I'll make it every time, it'll be good to go. Other than that, like, it's just have to trust it. I just didn't trust it. That's all it was.
I think a part of what you're saying is really important. I know in the backstage group, Shannon O'Keefe was mentioning that, like, in terms of just handling the butterflies or knowing your game, like, it's so much more important to trust the process all week, whether whatever your process is, if it's clearing your mind, and every time you clear your mind, you think clear. You know what I mean? Like, then when comes those high stressful moments, you got to go to that process, which is clear, because that process is going to get you there more times than anything else. So yeah, when it comes down to like those tournaments and those high pressure moments, trust your process, whatever it is. For me, I haven't committed to one process. And that's why I'm so here's an example, right? Like, when I shoot spares where there's nothing on the line, or let's say we go to GameWorks or whatever, I don't think about the pressure because there is none. right? It's easy for me just to shoot it and just go, yeah, we here we go. But when there is pressure, it's far less easy for me to go, we. All of a sudden, I start factoring in all these other things that I shouldn't. So for me to go from clear to clear when it's a little murky, I don't do that well. I let the murky fade into whatever the situation is. So I have to find a way to, when things are clear or less stressful, trick myself into thinking that this shot is, this is, you know, this is, I'm on television right now and this spare matters more than anything in the world. Or if that doesn't work for me, go a different route. But I think exploring what your route is half the battle.
So one thing I would do is basically you're trying to hit a certain number before you can leave. Because basically, with each shot, it puts more pressure on it. Because if you make it, then you're done for the day. But if you
Yeah.
don't make it, then you have to
Yep.
start over.
There you go. That's exactly.
And so that's a good way to put pressure on you without having to like try to figure out how to put money on the line or something like that. Or
Ex I
you can
re
even put a dollar per spare on the line. But I think the pressure thing with like stacking it up like that is a really good way. And then it also allows you to progress it too, because like if you do 12 times in a row, next time you have to do 13.
Well, and I think too that's a gigantic thing that you should do, because in all sports that's something that applies. Free throws, you know, how many spirals you throw to your receiver, like everything you do, if you can just inch it along and say I have to do 10 in a row, that keeps you focused through every single one. And yeah, you're gonna feel the pressure 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 every time, probably more than you are 1, 2, 3. But once you get used to that pressure, over the course of a year, you want to get to 15 in a row and you want to be able to track that. And that alone is the process, I think, that will get you to what we're both speaking on. So I guess to conclude this conversation, we've gone about an hour. My question to you, unless you have anything more, my question to you would be, what is your number going to be this week? And then I will match you. And that will be our number. And we will be stuck in a bowling alley until we pick up that many spares.
I'm gonna say 12 because that's throughout a game, but I also need to do multiple spares, so I don't want it to go too long because I need to do the other spares too. So I think 12 is my answer.
So let me get this straight. You have to shoot 12 in a row, or else you can't leave a bowling alley. You think that is a low benchmark that you can achieve for like from day one?
That's my benchmark because if I can't shoot 12 of the same spare in a game, then I'm probably not shooting 200 if I'm not striking that day.
All right. So here's the challenge, Kyle. What day are you going to go to GameWorks and or wherever this week? Shoot 12 spares in a row and throw it on the live, because I will do the same, maybe not the same day. And I don't even know if 12 is a rational number for me, but I'm going to have to evaluate that number for me. But what day are you going to go do this?
Probably do Thursday night at sunset.
Thursday.
Because I'll just hop on the hour and just go.
Okay. All right. Thursday night at sunset, I can
Spare.
meet you there. That works. There's no league this week for us, so that works for me. I like that game a lot. What time are you going to go?
Probably 9 o'clock, and that's when they do their hour special.
9 o'clock. What would be better, the hourly or the game? Or per game, probably
Hourly.
be better. Or what's the hourly at sunset?
It's $20 for an hour after 9. So
Oh, yeah,
it's
just
not as
throw down.
cheap as GameWorks, but it's definitely cheaper than buying a whole bunch of games because I think the price rate at that time is a lot higher than other places.
Voila. All right. So $10 a piece. We each get just to rep out some spares and we can walk out of the building when we hit our number. I actually am kind of terrified about this. Now, will
Worst
the
case
spare.
scenario, we go till midnight.
I mean, yeah, again, if we're there till midnight and we're shooting spares for 3 straight hours, yeah, man, we're probably going to get a lot better. So I'm for this. And if we not, and you know, that's, I'm not saying we're of Tiger Woods or nothing caliber, but sometimes going 10 for 10 and then leaving is the best practice you can have. Sometimes it's nice to just have an efficient practice. So we're either getting in reps Well, we're getting in an efficiency. So you pick your number that you think is fair for me, because I'm not trying to stay till 12, and I don't know if I'm going to go 12 for 12. So you throw out a number, and I will accept that. You know my game, and we'll rock from there.
Okay, sounds good.
What do you think?
Love
Throw
that.
my number out there.
I'm trying to think. How many spares would you say would be enough that, like, if you made that many spares in a game, you would 100% make it where you're at right now with pins? Like, you'd 100% make it to the finals if you made those that many spares every time.
So I was trying to go 7 spares per game, 3 strikes. That was my goal. So,
So I think 7 would be a good number then.
okay,
That's
7 per
your.
game. Yeah, because that was really what I was shooting for as like a benchmark of like, if I can shoot 7 spares per game, I know I'll strike here and there when it's a good shot. So, all right, 7, 7, and 12. You sure you want to have yours at 12? I'll feel guilty after going 7 for 7 and watching you leave, but watch me say this. And you go 12 for 12, and I'll be there struggling on 5 for 5. But
Yeah, I need to shoot 12, right, to
man.
be able to shoot that many.
All right. Well, I guess as well. I don't know. Are there leagues going on this Thursday?
No. Well, there are before we bowl, but there won't be once we get there.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess we can give an open invite to anyone else that wants to go. It's $20 per hour at the Sunset. We're going to be practicing spares. If you want to get your own lane and do the same thing, that'd be great. After league, we'll be there at 9 to 10. And anything else you got, Kyle?
That's everything. Thank you,
Cool, cool.
guys.
All right, cool. All right, guys, have a good week. Hey guys, if you took the time to make it all the way through to the end of the podcast, just want to say thank you again for taking time out of your day to listen to what we got going on in our world. Sometimes a lot of the things that we talk about maybe can get long-winded, or maybe you can go without hearing them. But for us, at the very base level, this is a way for us to have an audio journal and keep ourselves honest with the things that we want to obtain to the higher goals, better bowler, and so on and so forth. So someone asked me what was the reason behind doing this podcast. I had someone come up to me at the most recent league that I had, and at the end of the day, it's just to, like I said, have a true audio journal of what we're doing, where we're doing it, and at the end of the day, just to kind of reach out to the community and see what else other people are doing with their games. So hopefully, you put two heads together, you get a better idea. Well, you put a whole city of heads together and hopefully you have a grand idea. So that's the goal, that's the plan, and hopefully you guys enjoy these podcasts. We're gonna have another one coming out next week. Until then, hope you guys have an awesome week.